It's Light the Tower, your daily look around the world of sports with Hall of Fame broadcaster and voice of the Texas Longhorns, Craig Way, and Horns 24/7 insider, Jeff Howe, on your live, local, and independent home for sports talk in Austin, The Horn.
Second hour of Light the Tower on the Horn. Craig Way, Jeff Howe with you. Our producer, Cameron Parker.
So, can I just mention something on the Marlin deal again?
Yeah. Five of 33 seniors, eligible to graduate.
I don't want to disparage anybody in Marlin, but I can't imagine that, like, if you were valedictorian or salutatorian, that your grade point average was all that high. But you still get top 10%, you get automatic admission to any public school in the state still?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a scary proposition.
The best story I ever heard about that sort of deal.
The top 10 bit?
Yeah. This would have been, this goes back, I think this was, it was definitely when Rick Barnes was coaching Texas, but it might have been when James Dickey was finishing his time at Texas Tech. Before Bob Knight came in, I think it was. And
it's a name I haven't had to think about in a while.
James Dickey?
Yeah.
Well, Craig, we had a good ball club. We were hoping to be able to beat Texas. He was a good dude. Good dude. I always enjoyed visiting with him. But his last game, I think Tech won 7 ball games that year. United Supermarkets Arena, then United Spirit Arena, had just opened. And it was a day game. And Texas went in and beat them pretty soundly or whatever. And I was not flying back with the team because I think I was going to go out the next day, the next morning, and fly somewhere to do baseball, something like that. Or there was there was a women's game there the next day, so I was staying overnight. So what I did know was that particular weekend was the UIL girls' regional basketball tournaments going on.
Mm-hmm.
You had the 3A going on there, which would now be 4A, there at United Supermarkets Arena. But I rode over to Leveland, and it was not girls, it was the boys. I drove over to Leveland, where the 1A boys regional tournament's going on. Now, in those days, in the 1As, you had a 128-team bracket. And the reason you had that was because you had a lot of very small 1A schools that had basketball and or might have baseball or golf, but they didn't have football. So it differentiated, you know, whether they had six-man or not or whatever. You had a 128-team bracket in basketball. Mm-hmm. So I go over to Leveland. You ever been over to Leveland, the Texan Dome? Have you ever been over there?
Can't say that I have,
old
Craig.
Old school arena there. Pretty cool deal. Well, you would have an 8-team regional tournament where you would play 3 games in basically 24 hours. You play Friday afternoon or Friday night, Saturday morning, and then come back Saturday night. That's how they used to do it in 1A. In fact, I did a couple of those in Stephenville back in the day. So I go over there, and they're getting to the regional final on Saturday evening. And in that regional final is Nazareth, and they're playing a school called Allison. I don't know if you've ever heard of Allison, Texas.
Davey Allison, former NASCAR driver?
Spelled the same.
Okay.
Spelled the same. Way up on the northeast side of the panhandle, really close to the Oklahoma state line up there. And
Cam, how deep is your NASCAR knowledge? Very big?
Very good. His is very good.
Didn't Davey Allison drive the black Javelin car?
He did.
Number 28?
Number 28, the late Davey Allison.
Badass looking car, too. The red and the black. Mm.
Lost him in a helicopter crash. At Talladega, if I remember correctly. So I'm there for the for this regional tournament, a regional final, and Allison is playing against Nazareth. And I had somebody come up and ask because I was wearing a suit having done the basketball game, and they saw I had a burnt orange tie on, and they thought I was there to scout a kid from Nazareth. And I had to tell them, no, I'm not. I'm just here to watch. And they get talking to him about Allison, and Allison High School had an entire student body enrollment of 17 kids. Now, they had 6 on the basketball team. But they had 17 total kids. Senior class, uno.
One
in the seat. That meant you were the valedictorian, the salutatorian, you were the highest ranked senior, and you were the lowest ranked senior.
That's something else.
In the class. But, yeah, you're number one in your graduating class.
Apparently, you have to be a top 6% of your class to get into the University of Texas.
Yeah, you do. That's right. Now you do. Back in the day, it was 10%. So, anyway, that happened then. That was one that was the highest ranked senior there. It was from Allison, which no longer, I don't think the school exists anymore. It got absorbed into something. They ended up closing it later.
Hey, so, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
We play Bodhisattva as our return music for the second hour.
Yes.
Is that one that you like listen to? I was thinking about this morning because I had some of my driving fast music on. Stuff that when I'm listening to it, I can hit the accelerator a little harder. Is Bodhisattva one of those songs for you, or is that kind of a just, hey, I'm enjoying myself?
Steely Dan is kind of, hey, I'm enjoying myself. Cam played one on Wednesday when you were driving up.
Mm-hmm.
The number one road trip song for me like that is Radar Love.
Okay.
Golden Earring.
Mine's a little different. I've got like some White Zombie, some Metallica, some DMX.
How about Sammy Hagar? I Can't Drive 55.
No, not down with Sammy Hagar.
Okay.
Maybe some Van Hagar, but not Sammy Hagar.
See, I'm just the opposite. I like Sammy Hagar when he was by himself, and Van Halen when they had Diamond Dave, when they had David Lee Roth. Yeah, I like the older Van Halen, you know.
But, I got you.
Yeah, but anyway.
You any thought? Either one of you guys have thoughts on White Zombie as a band or Rob Zombie?
Neither Fish Nor Fowl.
I don't listen to much of that genre, but something about, you know, you hear the Thunderkiss 65 coming through the speakers, and you just feel the need to drive 90 all of a sudden.
Yeah.
You got any music like that, Cam, on the road trip, where you just pump you up a little bit, make you want to drive fast? Like, you can't drive slow when you hear a song.
Not really. Okay. I have a couple, like, hype playlists.
Okay.
But I don't really have a go-to.
What's on your hype playlist? Give me an example of what's on your hype playlist.
I just went through a Supertramps, one of their albums, the gym the other day. That got me pretty fired up.
All right. There you go.
But it depends. My playlist is a good mix of classic rock, rap, some EDM, just anything that gets me going, you know?
Listening to the best version of Turn the Page, the Metallica version.
Or Bob Seger. I could go with both. I know Craig feels a little bit different.
You go with
about
one, you'd be going with the wrong one. Just saying.
It's just not one even man's, in
just one man's opinion.
There's somebody texted a picture that I've seen this sign where it shows Gerald to the left and Florence to the right.
Oh, I'm definitely taking the right.
It says, are you taking the left, turn to the right?
Right is right.
35.
Right is right in that situation.
Lido Shuffle, says Coach Gooby. That would be one. That there's another one there. All right. So, anyway, a lot of stories about that stuff. Somebody said, I like to take the T-tops off of the Boston tape in and head on down the road. My dad had one of those, a Chrysler Cordoba, where you have the T-top. He'd pull out those slide-in glass roof, and then you'd have a T-bar roof. Yeah. It had that there as well. Okay. Somebody said, welcome to the planet MF-er. Woo. There you go. All right. Coming up.
I love Craig reading y'all's derogatory texts that come through and trying to class it up any way possible.
Oh, I was just reading it.
Oh, no.
Just reading it. Born to be Wild, John Kay and Stephen Wolf. Yeah, there's stuff like that. All right. I want to hit the break a little bit early. When we come back, we have another Longhorn Notebook. We'll talk some baseball and some regional projections and some other oddities, things that happen with the college baseball scene.
Got also have a little basketball update.
Okay.
And got to get to some football as we prepare for the SEC spring meetings.
Yeah, that's just around the corner. This is Light the Tower on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9 AM 1260. We're live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. Now, you want Sammy Hagar? This is Sammy Hagar.
I still lean towards Van Hagar, but this does go hard.
This is pre-Van Halen Sammy Hagar. This is the Sammy Hagar I saw at the Texas Jam in the Cotton Bowl in 1979.
I've heard legendary stories about the Texas Jam.
I was there.
Wild time, apparently. Fire. Were you acting a fool at Texas Jam, Craig?
I was.
Letting your hair down?
Yep. What hair I had. I mean, it's still short back then. Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. There you go.
Yeah. This is before Van Hagar. Sammy Hagar was a relative unknown until this. He got this Planet's on Fire. But anyway, somebody just on the Specs text line said, "Now we're talking."
Can't believe I got no reaction from you guys on White Zombie. I guess I'm over here in my own boat with that.
I think so. Okay.
Every now when you're not here, Craig, I make Cam play one of my. I call that for my angry period.
I've heard it.
Like
I've
some MOP, it. Get a little Annie up.
What is White Zombie? Just heavy metal?
Yeah, it's pretty. Yeah. In the metal genre.
Somebody said it was so damn hot in the Cotton Bowl that day. Boston was a headliner. Hey, I can tell you the lineup that day. There was a band named TKO that started. It was nothing. Then he had Nazareth. Then you had Sammy Hagar was the second act. Then Nazareth, Van Halen, Boston, Heart, Blue Oyster Cult.
Damn.
Wrapped up about 2 o'clock in the morning.
It's like a hell of a show.
I was in those days too. And again, this is summer of '79. I went with my younger brother and a friend, and Sammy Hagar played this. And when I was there. It felt like we were all burning in hell because it was really, really hot. And I think about this. I went that entire day from like, and we got there the night before and we're hanging out around it and slept in the car, whatever. And we got in early next morning. We get on the floor because we want to be right down there.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm down there and it is hot. And I go several hours. I don't drink anything. No water, no nothing. They had no concessions down. And eventually I get real tired. So I figure I'm taking a nap, but I don't realize I'm getting heat exhaustion.
You're passing out.
So I wake up and I'm just really, and a guy had one of those big wineskin things, flask. He goes, "You thirsty, man?" I said, "Yeah." He goes, "Here, have some water." And I said, "Really?" He said, "Yeah." So I take this long drink off it. He goes, "Go ahead, have some more." Take another big long drink off it. And I said, "Man, that's great." He goes, "You like that?" I said, "It tastes a little bit sweet." And he said, it has opium in it.
Yeah.
And I went, "What?" And he goes, "Yeah, that opened." I thought, great. Okay.
That's how Craig Way parties.
So then I kept waiting for something bad to happen, and nothing bad was happening. And then as the sun had set and Boston's on stage, I'm crowded. And all of a sudden, I look at the back of this guy. He had one of those big rugby shirts, had the big stripes.
Uh-huh.
And all of a sudden, it just kind of shimmered in front of me. And it looked like a fishing dock, a little dock. And instead of going, "Man, I messed up," I thought to myself, "Oh, there's a place to stand." And I started to walk up to it. It almost hit him in the back. And I stopped. I go, "Come on, snap out of it." And that was it.
Craig was tripping.
Yeah, I was. That day, Texas Jam, 1979. It's glorious, man. Stayed all the way through that Heart and then Blue Oyster Cult. Folks were disappointed in the Blue Oyster Cult performance because
not they enough
were
cowbell.
They had plenty of cowbell. They were supposed to have a big laser show, and only their laser bracelets were working. They didn't have the whole big full on because lasers were still relatively new.
Were you well within your mind to care or not?
No, I cared. I know. I knew at that point. It's like, and we ended up leaving afterwards.
With that little to drink over that time, kind of day,
yeah.
did your urine look like orange Kool-Aid the next day?
I can't even remember. I got home. I got home that night. I remember my dad asking me. He goes, "Did you guys eat or drink anything?" And I said, "Well, there wasn't anything." And he goes. He said something like, I think my dad said something like, "Y'all are idiots.
Just had to go pee. It looked like Benadryl. I think something's wrong.
Right.
It's not supposed to, look like this."
Yeah. You didn't want to give up your place. We were like 10 rows from
the
stage.
On the pee chart, you would have been you're just a bad guy.
I'd have been a bad guy.
Bad guy.
Not just a bad teammate. I'd have been a bad guy. It would have been dark. All right. Let's move to our Flex 30 update.
Flex ATX for the best high school sports coverage. Listen to the horn and go to FLXATX.com. Flex 30 is brought to you by Brain Vault. Brain Vault is a revolutionary and patented mouth guard that has been proven to help reduce the risk of concussion. Visit BrainVault.com and join the movement.
High school baseball playoff stuff, Cam. Westlake takes game one from Eagle Pass last night.
Yeah, 7-2 final score. Chance Covert, the junior, signed the Texas. Another really solid outing. Gave up just one run, a couple hits, but he pitched five innings after not going longer than the second inning in his first two starts. He's gone at least five in the last two against Round Rock and against Eagle Pass. Eagle Pass committed four errors in that game. They had an inning where they walked four Westlake batters. So Westlake jumped all over them. Will Maggots, he brought in the first run, and from there on, Westlake just took control. So game two is at 2 p.m. here at Warner Field. Westlake a win, and they're on to the regional final.
Regional finals, state quarterfinals. Also a winner, Rouse taking game one from La Jolla Palmview, and they won that down in, say it with me, Jeff, Jerdenton.
Jerdenton.
And they won that down in Jerdenton.
Yeah, I'll make sure you say it right.
Game two today, and if necessary, a third game that will follow, are going to be played down at Coastal Bend College.
Ooh.
Now, I know somebody somewhere it was listed as in Corpus. It's not in Corpus. It's in Beeville. It used to be Bee County College. It's down in Beeville. So they're going to be at Coastal Bend College as the Rouse Raiders in that best of three try to advance to the quarter round. How about the Taylor Ducks?
Yeah, Taylor Ducks keep on rolling. Number 10 team in the state in 4A, a 4-2 victory over Spring Hill last night. Ducks keep on rolling. We got some texts coming. There's a lot of support for the Taylor Ducks that are on the Specs text line.
Absolutely. So
Chris Perez got the win last night. Shout out Perez. 6 2/3, just two runs, five strikeouts. Taylor, game two, believe today, Craig, will be, if I can pull it up real quick.
Quack Attack.
At Midlothian, 2 p.m.
Yeah.
Game three.
Spring Hill is over by Longview. It's right over by Longview.
Turn my mic on.
So there's your
game three would fall, if necessary, 30 minutes after the conclusion of game two, which would be the same thing for Westlake because it's a little bit of a drawing.
Same thing for Rouse also.
Yeah.
In La Jolla Palmview. Yeah. Same deal. All right. There you go.
Oh, one more tidbit.
Oh, yes.
Yes. A football vacancy has been filled, and as our friend Greg Tepper would say, my alma mater, Craig, has joined the dark side.
Uh-oh.
Florence hired Robert Draper, who was at Liberty Hill for a while, longtime Liberty Hill assistant. Most recently, the offensive coordinator at Marble Falls. So, the slot T is coming.
How about that?
To Northwest Williamson County.
Yeah, where he was running it for our good friend Brian Herman.
Yes. So, congratulations, Coach Draper, everybody out in Florence. That's something I want to go see how that slot T experiment's working.
From one set of purple to the other.
Yes.
As he goes there.
Well, quick update, Craig. I was wrong. Taylor, Spring Hill, game two will be Saturday, tomorrow.
Okay.
So a day off, and then game two tomorrow, 30 minutes after that if a game three is
somebody's got graduation. Yeah. That's probably why they're taking the break, I would bet.
Somebody said, hey, Coastal Bend College is a beautiful stadium. Yeah, I'd heard about that. A good friend of mine who works with us on the on the parabolic microphone, Steve Leach, played baseball at Coastal Bend. His dad had been the coach back in the day when it was Bee County. All right, so there we go. There is your Flex 30 update. Time now for our second hour Longhorn Notebook.
Jeff Howe's Longhorn Notebook.
All right, before we get to baseball, just a couple of quick updates. One, and we'll be tracking this next week because I'm expecting some kind of ruling or decision to be made. It does seem, Craig, like the support for a 9-game SEC schedule, at least at the outset of Texas and Oklahoma joining the conference, is dwindling. So you could see them go to an 8-game schedule. Now, here's why. If the SEC goes to a 9-game schedule, then that's more quality game inventory, which then the league will want more money from ESPN, who's going to be the exclusive media rights partner for football and men's basketball.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is ESPN, now granted, they're paying Pat McAfee a bunch of money, and they've got salaries to Troy Aikman and Joe Buck and Stephen A. Smith. But they're also having massive layoffs right now, Disney is, and ESPN's impacted by that, and they don't necessarily want to fork over more cash than they have earmarked right now. So I think initially you could see, if it's an 8-game schedule like we've talked about, then you're going to go to the model where you just play one permanent opponent per year, and then you're going to rotate the other seven opponents, which in that case for Texas, from everything we've heard at Horns 24/7, you get to Horns 24/7, we got plenty more on the SEC schedule because we don't have time to get into all of it here. The permanent opponent for Texas, from my understanding, would be Oklahoma, and then they would rotate everybody else. So you'll get Texas A&M in football at some point. there's just a growing possibility that it might not be in 2024 or 2025.
Very interesting if it happens that way.
So it does seem like they're, and maybe for the first few years, I don't know. I would think at some point they're going to be able to go to a nine-game schedule. But it does seem like, which, if you're a Texas fan or an Oklahoma fan, just get your head wrapped around for the 24 and 25 seasons.
Maybe an eight-game schedule?
You're probably going to have, if that's the case, you're probably going to have an FCS team on the schedule.
You're gonna have, it'll be
no way to avoid it.
Texas will be drawn into cupcake.
Yeah, just no way to avoid it at that point.
You can play a Division I. I mean, Massachusetts is a Division I
program. Yeah, but at that, you're finding independence. It'd be really hard to schedule an FBS opponent.
Late in the season like that, too, when they do that. Yep.
So maybe Texas is playing, I don't know, UIW or pick your FCS school.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Tarleton.
Yeah.
Or is Tarleton going to the – I don't know where Tarleton is right now. Conference realignment. Tarleton's going to the Southland, aren't they? Or are they already there?
They're in the WAC.
Okay, well, never mind.
Yeah, yeah. They're in the WAC. Speaking of which,
basketball note, real quick. Sorry, Craig. The dead period ends at midnight tonight.
Okay.
So starting tomorrow, colleges can host recruits. For Texas, it still looks like Caleb Love, the North Carolina transfer, is pretty high up on the board. Cam Spencer, the Rutgers transfer, both guards, by the way. Pretty high up on the board for Texas. It's interesting, really interesting name popped up on the in the transfer portal, or at least going announcing he's going into the portal yesterday. Tyler Burton from Richmond, who's still in the NBA draft pool, by the way. The 31st, next Wednesday, is the deadline for that. It's been reported by a couple of different outlets that Tyler Burton, when he goes into the portal, right, 6'7 wing, really talented scorer for Richmond. It's been reported, Craig, that he's going to go into the portal with a do not contact tag, which means one of two things. One, either he already knows where he's going, or two, he's only going to allow, he only wants contact with certain schools. In other words, he doesn't want the flood of schools contacting him. He'll basically, don't call me, I'll call you, kind of thing. So it could be one or the other, but you know, I can tell you Texas was doing due diligence on him yesterday, has been doing due diligence. Could see something there, but I think over the next 24 to 48 hours, we'll figure out where things are, including what if there is a no contact tag, what exactly it means.
Okay. So with regard to your deal about the SEC scheduling, somebody said, I don't understand why they can't go to four pods of four. That means you'd play the same three people every year, and then from each other pod if they had a nine-game schedule, so every 2 years everyone would get to play everyone. The way I understood it is it doesn't work the pods with the three-team rotating with 16 teams in the league.
Yeah.
There's four teams per pod, but remember, you're playing three and that it doesn't work in a 16. That's the way I had it explained to me.
I think it was about a year ago, around the SEC meetings last year, where it was everybody reported coming out of that deal that pods were off the table.
Yep. That wasn't going to happen that way. So yeah, we'll continue to follow it and see why it, see what would be there. With regard to Coastal Bend, somebody said Sinton played there last night, lost 1-0. Adrian Allen, he said they left 12 runners on base. Hopefully that was just game one there for Sinton, for Adrian's team. Their APD number one about my deal with the Texas Jam said championship levels of dehydration. It really was. So, yeah. And Bruce said, can the real Craig Wake please stand up? I was 18 years old at the time. I didn't even know.
Craig, as you get into an advanced age, if you start having problems that require a trip to the urologist, blame it on Texas Jam.
Yeah, 1979, June of 79.
It'll all get traced back to there.
Yeah. Fortunately, I haven't had that issue. And somebody else pointed out, Sammy was with Montrose. He was never able to sing for much more than an hour. Yeah, because he was driving it. Listen to some of the music of Montrose to hear some good rock. Yeah, that's very true. With regard to baseball, and again, we'll find out, obviously, on Monday morning what the regional release is.
We'll find out Sunday. Right.
We'll find out who the regional hosts are Sunday. Yeah. That's for sure. So it'll be Sunday night. Those will be, and I think that's just going to be a crawl across the bottom of the screen, probably in a softball telecast, a super regional.
Yeah, I think it was an online deal last year.
They did it both. They did a dual release on that. So there's that. So you'll probably find out on that. Jeff mentioned D1 Baseball did update their regional projections, but the updated ones still list Texas playing in Stanford as the 2 seed, with UC Santa Barbara the 3, and, oh, there's somebody they know, San Jose State as the 4. These updated ones, for example, shifted Kansas State from Gainesville, Florida, to Kentucky. Seeing again, there seems to be more logical flexing about with the 3s than the 2s. The 2s, there's a lot more heading out west or heading east or whatever with regard to that. And in the Baseball America projections, as we said, they've got Texas in Auburn, Alabama. The ones to continue to watch during the weekend to see, you know, you see teams like Kentucky and Alabama that took losses. Auburn is listed is where Texas would be in that one. Now, you also, excuse me, have to keep an eye on bid stealers. It could happen again, although the amount is going to be low, and the ones that would be bid stealers may come really from leagues that only the champion is going to come. And I submit to you the WAC. Grand Canyon won the WAC by one half game over Sam Houston because they played one less conference game. They got a rain out, and they had one less loss than the Bearcats. So they were the 1 seed. Sam Houston was the 2. Sam Houston took an early loss in the tournament. Now they battled their way back. They got an elimination game today against Abilene Christian. On the other side of the bracket is Grand Canyon. They had won their first game. They had to play a UTA team that had lost its first game to UTRGV, which has since been eliminated. Then UTA came back and had to play 2 games yesterday. They eliminated Seattle, and then late last night, yes, I saw the end of it, UTA beat Grand Canyon 6-5. Among the heroes for the Mavericks, who came out of the bullpen to pitch a scoreless 8, stop me if the name sounds familiar, Caden Noah, a one-time Longhorn pitcher from Longview. Yeah. He pitched a scoreless 8. They held on. They won 6-5. So now what has to happen is it will be Grand Canyon. UTA has to play the winner, I think it is, of Grand Canyon and somebody else. And then they're on one side of the bracket, and then Sam Houston and Abilene Christian on the other side of the bracket. So you could wind up with a bid stealer there, although it isn't a bid stealer in the truest sense of the word, because that league looks like it's only going to get its tournament champion in anyway. Grand Canyon got in as an at-large last year. Remember when New Mexico State won the league? Doesn't appear that that's going to happen this time around.
What about the Missouri Valley? Indiana State.
That would be a bid steal. Well, Missouri State is a team that if they were to win it, then that would be a bid stealer. They were right on the cusp for a little while ago, but probably, yes. Indiana State's going to get in regardless.
Okay.
They're listed as a host right now on D1. Now, if they wind up not winning the Valley, then they're probably going to, they're not going to be a regional host, but they would still get in the field. So I think you keep an eye on that today.
Yeah, Missouri State, Murray State, by the way, in that semifinal in the Missouri Valley, they're underway right now. They started at 10.
Yeah. And then Dallas Baptist is still rolling along in the Conference USA tournament. UTSA is done. It's a shame for them because they had it rolling for a while. They're not even going to be. They kind of suffered the same fate that Texas State has been suffering down the stretch. Mm-hmm. Texas State's still alive, but they've got to win some more games. I think if they were to win against Louisiana tonight and then beat Coastal twice to get to the Sun Belt tournament final and play like a Troy in the tournament final or Southern Miss, then they might have a shot to get back in on the at-large if there isn't too much bid stealing going on. But they definitely got to win at least 3 more games, and the pitching is starting to get a little lean now.
Can I say something positive for Texas right now? I do like the fact, and, you know, when you get into regional play, especially if you're in the position Texas is with your staff, you know, your starters and your bullpen, just your pitching staff being what it is right now, especially if No Heston Toll, no David Shaw. You're losing two good bullpen hands. I like the fact that now with LeBaron, with LBJ's emergence, the fact that, and I'm not taking anything away from Lucas Gordon at all, but the fact that, you know, you might struggle with that decision. Okay, do you throw your number one guy in the opener? Do you save him for two? I don't think David Pierce has to worry about that, because you can just go, well, Gino, that first game, follow him up with LBJ.
I think you're
just keep the rotation what it is, and I think you're fine. Like, you feel like you can go win both games.
And
because those, going back to what we talked about in the first hour, those two guys gave you a chance to win both the games you lost the last 2 days.
Going on a day's less rest. They're both going to have bonus rest for the regional. Two extra days. Mm-hmm. And that's where I like their chances with Lucas Gordon in game one and LeBaron Johnson in game two. I do. I think you got to
stay in the winner's bracket, just because of your bullpen situation. If you can keep Tanner Witt in a rhythm, in a routine, keep him on schedule, that's going to benefit you all that much more.
That's what really hurt Oklahoma in the Big 12 tournament last night. It looked like with Peyton Carmichael, they were rolling, and that they were going to – he had a 5-0 lead handed to him, but as Skip Johnson pointed out, they didn't get their outs on time. Yeah. Made mistakes and errors. Tech comes back and wins. Now Oklahoma, which is a bubble team on the plus side, but nevertheless a bubble team, is going to have to beat
of the 64 at large that D1 has. Oklahoma 62. So that's
bubblicious.
Rip right there.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we'll be back. Oh, Victor asked me. He said, "Did you have a great memory before that Sweetwater, or did it trigger something miraculously in your brain?" No, I did, and my family thought it was annoying, so I understand that. We'll be back to wrap up today's edition of Light the Tower on the Horn. All right, we hope you have a great holiday weekend. Jeff, just looking really quickly here, if you had your choice of any of the 16 regional sites and do not include Texas, and said, okay, you could go there to cover the Longhorns in that regional, which one would it be?
Give me two options. Either give me, as crazy as it sounds, Baton Rouge.
Okay.
So I have a good time there. Or how about Boston?
Boston was all mine. The other for me was going to be either Charlottesville or Conway.
Baton Rouge is the food, let's be honest.
Yeah. Conway is Myrtle Beach. It's pretty good there, too. All right. Wherever it is, we'll find out. And we hope you have a great and safe holiday weekend. For a man behind the glass, Cameron Parker, for my co-host, Jeff Powell, I'm Craig Ray. Thanks for joining us. Chad and Zay are up next. We'll visit with you Tuesday. Tuesday, next time on Light the Tower on the Horn.